Welcome to a special Casper Media presentation of the first annual WILO Mental Health Summit. Today's broadcast is also being streamed live at WILOTV.com. Today, we will speak with several area and regional representatives concerning mental health awareness and issues affecting us every day across the state and nation. Today's broadcast is moderated by WILO News Director Ken Hartman and Laura Archibald with Healthy Communities of Clinton County. We hope you enjoy today's broadcast. The WILO Mental Health Summit is brought to you by Wampler Services, Inc., Encompass Credit Union, and the Clinton County Chamber of Commerce. Now, with some opening thoughts and introductions, here is your moderator for the event, Ken Hartman.
And welcome to the WILO Mental Health Summit. I'm Ken Hartman. The goal of this venture is to give everyone the ways and means to combat this growing problem, as well as give solutions and ideas on handling the issues. The summit is being sponsored by Encompass Credit Union, Wampler Services Incorporated, and the Clinton County Chamber of Commerce. Without these fine sponsors, we would not be able to bring you this event. Also, if anyone wants to submit a question to be asked, they may call 659-3338 and leave that question with the person who answers the phone. Now, when introduced by co-host Laura Archibald, who's going to introduce our guests.
Hello, my name is Laura Archibald. I'm the Executive Director at Healthy Communities of Clinton County. We were very picky when we put this panel of people together. We wanted to get people from all walks of life with all different experiences, but you're all here for a reason. You were chosen because you have mental health things that have happened in your life or in lives of people that around you, and you all have a reason that this is near and dear your heart. So I'm going to ask that we'll start with Kirsten, and you all introduce yourself and talk a little bit about why mental health is important to you and how it affects your either personal life or professional life or both.
Good morning. I'm Kirsten Clark, and I am the principal at Clinton Prairie Junior Senior High School. And this is my 17th year in public education. And in those 17 years, we have seen an increase in issues with our students, with social emotional issues, mental health issues. And this is something that affects us in our building on a daily basis. And we go home at night worrying about our students and their well-being. And we have seen some unfortunate incidents in the last couple of years at Clinton Prairie with deaths of students and suicides. And this is something that we are working hard to try and figure out and to help those kids every day. And sometimes, you know, it is a struggle. And so hopefully I can work with everyone here to get some answers for our students.
Hello, good morning. My name is Casey McGill, and I am the VOCA coordinator at Healthy Communities of Clinton County. My passion in the mental health field would have to be, I'm a recent graduate as of 2 years ago from IUPUI, but in high school, within over the past 5 years, I've lost three community members, family friends from a mental illness. And that kind of coming back home and having that hit home, I think that kind of drove my passion to get into this field and start helping and supporting and raising awareness in our community about mental health. So that is kind of why I started.
Good morning. I'm Dick Moore. And I'm representing NAMI, National Alliance on Mental Illness. I've been doing volunteer work for NAMI for about 12 years, I think. We were exposed to NAMI through a personal thing. Our son was diagnosed with schizophrenia. And you can imagine our introduction to it was a phone call in the middle of the night from our son who lived out of state, and his wife said he was having he was hearing voices, and you can imagine what our reaction was. We didn't know what was going on, what to do, you know, the whole works. It was totally new to us. So this put forth a lot of questions and answers, and we immediately went to visit them out of state, and luckily he was through CIT, crisis intervention team. He was talked to and came to understand that he needed to go to a health center there at the university where he was, and that started the whole process as far as getting help at that point. So this pointed out an incident which encouraged us, and we were so thankful for it as far as being exposed to NAMI, the training we took immediately was the Family to Family, where we learned all about the mental illness, what to do, what not to do, the whole works. And this is a deep encouragement for us to walk through the situation he was in. And the bottom line, he is doing great now. He finished his master's degree in Spanish and has his degree in computers. And he's presently has a family and lives in out of state. And so it was just a super experience. He recovered.
My name's Rodney Wan. I'm the administrator of the Clinton County Health Department. I'm here, first of all, from a personal situation and a personal background of I've had experience with mental health issues in my family. I lost my mother 30 years ago to mental health issues. I think, really honestly, whether diagnosed or undiagnosed, most families in America have had to deal with some sort of issue of mental health to some degree or another, and so therefore I think all of us really need to take a look at how we view mental health issues and how we support and treat others who are dealing with those from a community standpoint. From the county health department standpoint, obviously we deal with trends and statistics on a regular basis. And we see alarming rates of mental health issues in our county. We see a lack of resources through studies and surveys that point out that those resources are not available on a per capita basis to those folks that need it. We also see some associations with self-medication and substance use disorder issues that are now becoming a strong correlation to the issue, and we believe that it's partly because of this lack of resources and lack of availability to those resources that are leading us to this trend. And this trend is a dangerous one that we'll have a large struggle with combating. So from a public health standpoint, I'm here for those reasons as well.
Good morning. I'm Leslie Douglas, and I'm a licensed clinical social worker with the state of Indiana. I am currently the program manager at Community Howard Regional Health here in Clinton County, and I've been in social services since 1988, officially. My mother was a caretaker, so I think that's where I got into it. So I've really been probably in social services since high school, I would guess, but legally and licensed-wise since 1988. I deal with mental health issues on a daily basis with my job. Not only do we have folks who come to our office to seek help, but I also go to the Clinton County Jail for 5 hours a week. And there are significant numbers of individuals at the jail who have mental health issues who probably really should be seeking mental health treatment instead of being incarcerated. I think that since the mid-50s, when we started to deinstitutionalize mental health treatment, we ended up creating a whole situation where there was the stigma of mental health, as well as we didn't have the resources available for persons to seek services, because all the state hospitals, or a vast majority of them, closed across the country. I think that, that has contributed significantly to a lot of the mass shootings, as well as the drug and alcohol issues, because most folks have an underlying mental health issue who get into substance abuse.
Good morning. I'm Tammy Cooper, and I'm here on behalf of the Buck Up Foundation. This is a foundation that we actually founded for our son, and he suffered from depression for quite a few years and anxiety disorder, and he took his life. He died by suicide in October of 2016, and we have worked since then to bring awareness to the community, the Clinton County community, as well as the Lafayette community where I work, in the facility that I work in a manufacturing facility. So I see it often on both sides. And, you know, we want to work to bring awareness, stop the stigma associated with it, and let people know that it's okay to talk about it. It's okay to seek help, that it is an illness. It's very near and dear to all of us, and we work daily to do that and bring that awareness to everyone.
Good morning. I'm Jennifer Flora. I'm the director of Mental Health America Wabash Valley Region. We're located in Lafayette, Indiana. I have been the director there for 25 years. I've seen a lot of changes in the mental health world as far as treatment, as well as stigma and public understanding of mental health issues. With that, we certainly see the need for continued mental health education and services. Mental Health America does provide educational programs and supportive services for both individuals experiencing mental health issues and their families. We know that mental health and mental illness impact virtually every aspect of a person's life. The impact it has cannot be overstated. We know that one in four families are experiencing mental illness, and my family is no different. We are one of those one in four families. So I have both a personal and a professional passion for helping those struggling with mental health issues and increasing those services for them.
Okay, we're just going to ask a general questions here and let everybody go around the table. If you want to speak, just go ahead and just grab one of the mics we got out here for you. The question I got here for you is, how big of an overall issue is mental health, and do you feel it's being pushed to the back burner?
I would say that in my professional life, in the school, I don't feel like it's being pushed to the back burner. But I think the issue is that a lot of times we don't know what the issue is with students. If there are no outward signs or someone is not seeking help, we can't provide that help. And it feels like sometimes we're being more reactive than proactive because something happens and then we have to figure out where to go from there. So unfortunately, and I think that our counseling department would say the same thing, that we feel like we're more reactive than proactive, but it's difficult for us to know what those issues are if we're not being made aware of them through the student themselves or a faculty member who's noticing some changes or, you know, in their behavior.
I certainly agree that I don't think mental health is being pushed to the back burner. I think it is more out in the open today than it ever has been before. It's on the nightly news. It's in discussions with our coworkers and with our family members and our friends. So it's something that people are more aware of than ever before. The one area that I would say maybe is being pushed to the back burner is that of funding. We know that we have a serious problem with the number of people that are choosing mental health as their career. We do not have enough therapists. We do not have enough counselors. We know for folks wanting to make that a career, it can be a challenge financially. Some of the Medicaid reimbursements are based on 1973 levels, and we know that funding for services needs to be increased if we're going to have quality mental health professionals working in the field, as well as enough professionals working in the field. But as far as everyday conversation, it's right at the top of the list.
Uh, I would certainly agree with all the comments that are coming out here. And I think one general comment or conclusion, I think, too, is the fact of how important dealing with mental health conditions is. And I'm reading from a statistic paper here where it talks about among non-communicable diseases, mental health conditions are the leading cause of shortened lifespans worldwide and account for 37% of healthy life years lost. People with mental illness die an average of 25 years earlier than Americans largely treatable health conditions. And I think this is a valid assumption and a statistic. And I know in my experiences with teaching family and being on the board of NAMI out of Lafayette, NAMI Lafayette, West Central District, my conclusion is very strong. We need education on mental illness. Mental health. We need to recognize there's still the factor of stigma. We need to fight the stigma thing. I think if we get over that stigma barrier, I think more people would come forward and get help. And one of the key things about treatment of mental illness is support of family and friends along with professionals. And we need to be working through the schools. We need to be working through at the young age level. We need to be working with individuals. We need to be working with the families. We need to be working with communities. It's a community thing. I mean, because much of the stigma, I think, comes from the community. They're not aware of and don't have the contact with people with mental illness.
Dick, let me ask you, when you said you need to get young people involved, how young of an age are you talking about?
I'd be referencing the fact of at the family level, parents need to be aware of their responsibilities to meet the needs, the physical needs and the spiritual needs of it within that family. Beyond that, it has to be at the school level. In the school, now that we do have programs now going on where we do have presentations before the schools. I think Clinton Prairie is very active in that area, and others that are taking advantage of that program that's available.
I think, as I alluded in my introduction, the problem with mental health issues has been since there were people, I think. And in the 1950s in America, we decided to deinstitutionalize mental health services, which sounded great, and it also got a lot of people out of some really horrible conditions. However, what it did, especially at least in Indiana, which is what I'm familiar with, in 94, the last of the Central State Hospital closed several other state hospitals, and because of this, all of those folks who were living in those places were turned out into group homes, and they were turned out onto the street because there was not services. They were, if you will, dumped on the mental health community centers, and most of those people are likely dead or in jail at this point because, you know, they didn't take their medication, and so they became more mentally ill or the symptoms increased. And, you know, if you look at statistics, out of the mass shootings that we've had since 1984, 52.3% were definitely by persons who had mental health issues. And if there were an additional 80 or 26 people or cases that weren't clear. So even if all of those, which likely they did, that means that 78.5% of the mass shootings since 1984 have had persons who have mental health issues who are being untreated.
So what are the signs and symptoms of mental illness, and how does someone know when to seek help for themselves or someone that they love?
Well, it depends on the mental illness, what the signs and the symptoms would be. Depression could be that they're sleeping more or not sleeping. It could be that they don't have an appetite or they eat too much. It could be, that they have stopped taking care of their appearance. For anxiety, in children, anxiety looks a lot like ADHD. And, historically, we have diagnosed a lot of ADHD and put kids on medications that they likely didn't need because it was an anxiety-based issue. And because literally, if you think about a child who you think has ADHD and they are, wiggling in their seat or they're messing with people's stuff on their desks, that the same kind of thing is going on with a child who's anxious, who has had some sort of trauma in their life. And the trauma could be as simple as not knowing what they were going to have for dinner because there was no food in the house. The more common things like the anxiety and depression, it's changes in behavior, really. For things like schizophrenia and some of the more serious issues would be, somebody alluded to hearing voices. If you're having yourself or you know somebody who's having an entire conversation with themselves, but you only hear half the conversation, or if they tell you that that people are out to get them. I could probably tell lots and lots of stories here about different things I've heard, but I'll never forget my first experience with somebody who was diagnosed with schizophrenia as a professional. I was sitting in a room interviewing her, just she and I were in the room, and she kept looking behind me. And finally, it made me nervous enough, I looked behind myself. And I asked what she was looking at. And she said, in a whispered voice, "The man." And I said, "What man?" And she said, "That man." And I said, I turned around again and looked and said, "What man?" She said, "The man over in the corner." And then I looked again and I said, "So why are we whispering?" She goes, "Because he can hear us." And that was my first real experience where I was like, oh, wow, this is real to her. She sees this person. And, it was terrifying to her and a little bit to me as a professional because I was like, I'm okay. I don't know what to do here. So, I think that when it comes to signs and symptoms, there are many, 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 and they can be in opposing areas. Like I said, it can be not eating or eating too much, sleeping, not sleeping at all.
So, Tammy, I know that you had a personal experience with your son. Did he exhibit signs and symptoms? And, Dick, your son was out of state, so you probably weren't able to see the signs and symptoms as clearly. But from a personal story, can you address about what signs and symptoms that you were able to see?
Yes. With him, he had very high anxiety, and this all came about his freshman year in college, which is a big change time. So it's hard sometimes to realize, okay, is this because of the change that going into college, being away from home, or is there really something else going on? And just by talking to him, I knew that he was like very high anxiety, wasn't sleeping, wasn't eating. Nothing was making him happy, and he would call, and I just had that gut feeling that something was wrong. So immediately drove there, got him to the doctor, had him diagnosed, and started working through it with a counselor at that point as well with him to make sure that he had everything he needed. And it did get to the point where he did come home in December then, and he stayed home and re-enrolled at Purdue. That's what we needed to do so that he had, like Dick said, that family support with him. It was critical to be able to support him that way.
And we likewise, with our son having the symptoms, we went to visit and stayed with them for a little while. And when we got there, it was a matter of the person above who rented an apartment, she was hacking into his computer and had hidden cameras. And our son was, you know, tearing out the registers in his apartment, trying to find that microphone or whatever. Then later, it was a matter of him banging on the door of the apartment upstairs and accusing her. And then when you have to do some things, and we called the police, and police came, and then is when the CIT thing kicked in. The police were very trained on CIT. They were able to calm him down, and he agreed to go to sit in a police car, talk, and then from there they went to the University Health Center and got help. And that was just a blessing that it got things started. But things can be real, and it was very traumatic, to say the least.
One thing I'd like to add to your question, if someone is thinking maybe they need mental health services but they're not sure, and that is, it's totally fine to see a therapist and go to a counselor even when you're mentally healthy. We do this with our primary care physicians all the time, and particularly families that may have a significant history of mental illness. I have known that some of these families begin taking their children into a counselor when they're about 15 or 16 years old, just to have that discussion, to set the example of what it's like to talk to a counselor, and that it's okay. So if anyone should be wondering if they should be seeing a therapist, we certainly encourage them to do so.
So like a wellness check like we do for our physical health, but just doing it for our mental health as well.
Absolutely.
And I do think that part of it has to be with the fact of, in one of our classes we had with family, they stress quite heavily, mental illness is a biological disease. It's similar. It's a disease like stroke, heart attack. It's a biological disease. Once we get over that understanding, I think we can see things happen. People will come freely, I think, to visit professionals to get help. But right now, I think the stigma is still in a way as far as people seeking help when they really need help.
I kind of wanted to talk a little bit more about the warning signs. I recently finished a training through the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention called ASSIST, and that's Applied Suicide Intervention Skills Training. And with that training, we didn't really talk about warning signs, but more about exploring invitations. And with those is, if you're talking with someone who might have a mental health illness, or you're questioning if they are suicidal, talking with them and really, really listening to what they're saying to you. You know, are they giving away personal values, you know, items that they possess, they have a lot of value, are they giving those away? Are they talking about maybe going away and not coming back? Or, you know, exploring those invitations and really listening to people when you're talking with them and hearing those invitations and then listening to their story, finding a turning point in that story and really giving them hope and support and awareness, letting them know that you're there, and then helping them develop a safety plan if they are questioning about killing themselves. That training was really, really helpful in learning how to listen to those invitations and how to act on those in a way that's helpful and supportive.
I just wanted to add a couple things that we sometimes see in the schools for those outward signs and symptoms of withdrawing from their friends. Their attendance rate drops dramatically just because they don't want to come to school. They just don't want to be there. Withdrawing from activities. Their grades are slipping. Those are some of the things that we see at school that tell us, you know, that there may be an issue and that we need to investigate further.
Okay. Our next question is going to be, what resources are available in our community and or the area for people suffering from mental illness and their families?
A
We currently have two counseling agencies in the community, Community Howard Regional Health and Wabash Valley. Both have services available in the city of Frankfort. There are significant other services available in the Lafayette, Kokomo areas, even in Lebanon. And we in the community have mental health issues or mental health services available for individuals, families. We have groups available. We have psychiatric care available, where they can prescribe the medications for the various mental illnesses. We have a shortage, as was alluded to earlier. There are always room for more therapists and more psychiatrists to join the ranks of helping other people. But some people, I think, have a little bit of a stigma about coming to services in town because they don't want their friends and family to know because of that stigma. And I think that, there are countless services, Lafayette, Kokomo, Indianapolis, Lebanon, so that if people have that concern.
Mental Health America has quite a few services available, which are listed on our website. I will not go into all of those. I would like to mention two of them. One is we do have a 24/7 crisis hotline. People can phone that any time of day or night, and they can also text that number. We know for many junior high and high school students, and we're learning even college students, they would much rather text than talk. The number is 765-742-0244. And again, that is the phone number and the text number. So that service is always available. We also have a new program called Mental Health Navigator Services, and it is a program determined in our community as a community need about a year ago. It is a starting point for people that are trying to find a counselor. A lot of folks just don't know where to turn. They don't know who will accept their insurance, or they don't know who may provide services if they do not have insurance. And entering the mental health care services system can be a real challenge. A lot of people have had barriers. They may make 3 phone calls and find out that no place is even adding names to their wait list. Tippecanoe County and most of our surrounding counties are in an area called a mental health professional shortage area, so we do not have enough service providers. And Mental Health America is certainly working to help get people the services they need. So both our crisis center and our navigator services have been a big help to those seeking services.
Likewise, NAMI has been noted for educational presentations and classes. Family to Family is one class, peer-to-peer, wellness recovery, and crisis intervention. These can be classes that perhaps meet during or for 11 weeks, 10 weeks. It's a series of classes which provide a lot of certainly good information as far as mental health and mental illness is concerned. Likewise, we have volunteers putting on programs like the NAMI Connection. This is a recovery support group. A family support group also is a similar group. We also have just general information designed to meet a particular audience. And this could be who is NAMI? To learn more about what NAMI is doing and in our own voice, it would be a presentation from a person experiencing mental illness, just talking about her illness and what's involved, what she has gone through. A new one we have is also the stigma-free program where we're starting to meet with companies. The mental, focusing in on the mental health, mental illness issues that could be seen in the companies or organizations.
and helping the companies and with resources and help to eliminate a lot of that, not just the stigma, but helping the situation to make that company more productive when they do see some mental issues, mental health issues involved. So these are just a few. Another we've gotten into is we're starting a mentoring program now where we can plug in volunteers to be mentors for ones like the homelessness and ones coming out of jail, ones have the they need that help with a person walking beside them to see them through the rough times. And, of course, now the big one, too, is working with the schools. I think with Rossville and Clinton Prairie, they have class or not have presentations towards the students, junior high, senior high, also presentations for the parents, presentations for the parents and teachers and staff. I think this is so important that that they have a background knowledge of what a mental health and mental illness really is.
To kind of discuss more about the resources for mental health in Clinton County, with Healthy Communities of Clinton County, our mental health initiative, we host a annual 5K, and this year will be our second year. And that 5K is called Stepping on Stigma, and that is kind of our campaign that we wanted to start here in Clinton County to raise awareness about mental health. And that 5K is a run walk. It's available to anyone and any age can come, and they can enjoy a day where they can get resources for mental health. They can kind of discuss with professionals that are there. They can get their physical health up and going. That also improves their mental health. We really like to make that connection there, offer resources. We have good prizes, and it's really a fun-packed day and a good way to increase mental health awareness. This next year, that will be on May 11th, 2019, and it starts at 10 o'clock at the fairgrounds. Another resource that we have been trying to bring to Clinton County and that we have gotten approved is Send Silence Packing, and that is a national event where we have partnered with Active Minds to bring that program into Clinton County. And what Send Silence Packing is where they bring thousands of backpacks of stories that have been provided from family members and community members who have lost someone. And it's that story of that individual. It talks about their warning signs about what happened, how they found support, their families found support after that event had happened. And that Send Silence Packing is going to be coming to Clinton County on May 14th, 2019. It's the weekend right after the 5K. So May, we've really tried to raise awareness for the month of May, which is Mental Health Awareness Month. But then I know a lot of people are talking about resources that are in Lafayette and in Kokomo and here in Clinton County, but there are so many resources online. Lookup.com is a great resource for schools, for parents, for students. And there's also a bunch of mental health apps like Calm, Headspace, Pacifica, Happify, Breathe to Relax. Those are just some of the many apps that are available for people who suffer from anxiety and depression. If they're having a big presentation where they're really worried, they can sit down 15 minutes before that presentation and do an exercise on that app to help lower their anxiety. Those are just small ways that can help someone who's dealing with the mental health and bring positivity into that.
Also, I forgot to mention one resource thing that's available is this is a published article, published guide, I guess, resource guide to and a roadmap to recovery. This was a guide put together by Healthy Communities, and it does list the helps. It's just super. It covers everything, and it's programs available and crisis chapter in it or part of it. And but this is. I just appreciate the fact that they've gone to the extent of putting all the resources together in this one guide, and I think this is something that would be available, I think, through Catholic communities, and it's certainly a step in the right direction.
Bringing up that resource guide, I know one of the things that was vital is putting substance use disorder programs and support programs for families and mental health programs and resources together. What is that correlation between substance use disorder and mental health?
Often people who have substance use disorder, it started with mental illness of some sort. There's an underlying depression, there's an underlying anxiety, there's an underlying schizophrenia. Something is there that they're self-medicating for. And that's not 100% of the time, but often it's that connection. I think that, we as humans tend to look for some sort of a medication to deal with all of our problems, whether it be as simple as a headache or it could be, the hearing voices. And so, that it's just the common medical model that we look for some sort of a medication, and frequently that becomes the illegal medications or an illegal use of medications.
I think nowadays, especially with my generation, is if I had a bad day today, if I'm in pain today, I supplement that with alcohol or with drugs, or instead of focusing, oh, I've had a bad day, maybe I should go for a run. It's a lot of, I have this pain and I need something to diminish that pain. I need something to block that pain. But what we don't realize is that pain may be gone for 5 hours, for however long you've got that buzz for, but it's going to go away and that pain's going to come back. And there's something else out there that can help deal with that pain that's going to make it a lot easier.
In addition to that, that with that 5 hours, you're right, the pain does go away for just a short time. And it does come back sometimes in triplicate or double minimum, and I think that when you, one question that we have to ask ourselves is how much can we really expect our bodies to have zero pain? It is not realistic to think that a person is never going to have a single pain, just if for no other reason, the lack of care that we take with our physical bodies and what we put them through. I mean, if we expect to have zero pain, then that's what has created kind of our opioid crisis is, if we expect to have zero pain, then we want a pill to alleviate that pain. So we have to ask ourselves, what pain level is okay? What can we tolerate versus, what can I take to get rid of all my pain?
Okay, anybody else want to add anything on this particular topic before going to something else? Okay, why do you think suicide rates are at an all-time high?
I think that suicide rates are at an all-time high right now because we have persons who don't know how to cope with their various mental health issues and just life problems. I think that everybody's under a lot of stress and pressure to do well in college, to do well in school, to have that perfect relationship. And I think a lot of it's self-applied pressure or peer-applied pressure, but I think that they haven't been helped and learned so that they learn positive coping skills.
I agree with that, Leslie. To kind of add, I think there's a huge gap between what people think of physically healthy and then being mentally healthy. There's a large gap because you can see those physical, if I have a broken arm, if I have a black eye, people can see that. But if I'm feeling depressed today, people can't see that. So there's a huge gap between taking that time to really talk and associate yourself with someone's life and how they're feeling that day. There's a huge gap with our whole society in general.
I think that when Leslie said there's a lot of self-inflicted pressure and a lot of peer-inflicted pressure that we can look to, at least in the schools, we see a lot of social media coming into play with the way students feel about themselves. And I feel like, and even as an adult, because I think we can all say we may be guilty of this as well, we are looking at social media as a reality when in reality, it is not reality. We are seeing individuals, if you will, highlight reel on social media, and then we are comparing that to our individual lives. And I know that our kids are doing that a lot, and they're basing their self-worth on how many likes they get and how many retweets they get and what this person looks like and how I compare myself to them and why am I not making this much money. You know, why am I not taking the trips that they are? Why is my family not as together as my friend's family? All of these things that we see every day, and we're inundated with it every day because we, you know, we're on this all the time, kids and adults alike. We can't just say this is a generational thing because we're doing it too, a lot of us. So I think that there is a lot of comparison going on with kids and adults on why my life doesn't look like their life. And I think that's very difficult for them to separate that that isn't reality.
I'm going to pipe in from a layperson's perspective on this, that I hear a lot of this going on, and I have concerns on several issues with a lot of the things. We have a lack of resources, as we well admit, but we also realize with stigmatism existing, even if we had a plethora of resources, they might not be being utilized correctly. We have an opportunity as a community to take as parents training and opportunities. It used to be when I was a parent of a younger child, we have homeroom mothers and fathers and people coming in taking an interest in the school. I'd like to challenge those listeners out there today that are parents to come into someone like NAMI or Healthy Communities or some of our others, Mental Health America, get this training. We can't put the burden on the schools, on the counselors, and on the administrators any longer. We've already spread them too thin, but let's face it, as our principal was mentioning, the schools are a reflection of our society. There are many society in and of itself. We have an opportunity to stop a generational problem at an early age if we can get resources there now. And some of those resources can be as simple as community leaders and community individuals taking training, being in the schools to add to the individuals who are looking out for those children who are exhibiting the signs and symptoms we're talking about, reaching out. I think as a society, if you want to remove stigmatism, start caring about everybody that you run into and that you interact with every day. The signs are there, but many a times we're too stressed, we're too busy with our own lives that we don't really, oh, I heard that, it sounded kind of funny, but I'm going to put it off here in the back of my mind until I hear a shocking reality that something terrible has happened. And we had that opportunity to intervene then, but we need the skill sets, we need the training, we need the compassion in order to be able to do that, I believe.
And I would certainly agree with that. I know in some of the statistics, where they talk about today, 1 in 10 children and youth experiences mental illness conditions severe enough to cause significant impairment in their day-to-day lives. Without appropriate treatment, youth struggle with peer and family relationships, drop out of school, become entangled in the juvenile justice system, or most tragically, die by suicide. But let's take a brief look at another area of suicide. Mm-hmm. Mental disorders, signature injuries of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan affect 1 in 5 active duty service members and are the most common cause of hospitalization. Military suicide is a national crisis, with 1 active duty soldier taking his or her own life every 36 hours, and 1 veteran every 80 minutes. And so as Rodney said, pull alongside these people who experience these things or see these things. They need help. Don't shy away from it as far as a stigma standpoint. It's a sickness. It's an illness. It's a need. There's a need there for all of us as a community to be aware of what mental health, mental illness is, and be active to stamp out the stigma.
I would also say that, you know, when we're walking alongside each other, you know, you need to check on your friends that are down, but you also need to check on your friends that seem okay and that are happy and that are successful. But we always need to check in with each other, because you don't know what goes on besides what you see in that facade every day. And so we do need to walk alongside each other. I like the way that you said that, and check in with each other. And the people that work in my school, my colleagues, we have to worry about each other too, because those kids are our kids. You know, those 555 junior, senior high kids, those are all our kids. And when we're so concerned about them, then we get to a point where we're run down as well. So I worry about the kids, and I worry about the teachers, and I worry about the counselors and the nurse and the administrative team. And so we all have to look out for each other.
I'd just like to add that if someone listening is having thoughts of suicide, to reach out to someone, reach out to an adult, reach out to someone close to you, let them know what you're going through. If you feel like they're not listening, try reaching out to someone else. There is someone out there that will listen. You can always call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. They have excellent counselors on staff that can help. Again, we have our own local crisis center that is available 24/7. But if you're having, whether it's mental health issues, financial issues, relationship issues, let someone know, because there are people here that care about you and there are people that want to help.
Okay, we're going to go ahead and take a break. We'll have more of the Mental Health Summit after the break.